It's Lynn Rossetto Casper with The Splendid Table. Today it's Pinot Noir's older, smarter brother. The movie Sideways pushed this tricky red into the spotlight, but guess what? In France, it's been starring for centuries. They happen to call it Burgundy. Andrea Immer is here to teach us all we need to know. Well, the Sterns have the night person's eatery, opens at midnight, closes 11 a.m. JoJo's on the Strip in Pittsburgh. The big culinary comeback this year is Nut Oils, Almond, Walnut, and the gang. Sally Schneider has the skinny. World music master Bob Duskus has an offbeat take on music to entertain by. And then it's the latest from Paris. Ephemeral restaurants, open a week, gone forever. All this and your calls coming up on The Splendid Table. But first, this. It's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. The film Sideways did more for Pinot Noir sales than any 50 issues of The Wine Spectator. But the original Pinot Noir that started connoisseurs panting is French. They call it Burgundy. Now, it's one of the most luscious and confusing wines I know. So we have wine expert Andrea Immerd bringing us her Burgundy Code, the essentials to a good bottle. Consummate cook Sally Schneider talks how to play with the latest seasonings, fragrant nut oils from almond to walnut to pistachio. Bob Duskus of world music fame sidesteps the same old with his music picks for holiday gatherings. And as always, in the second half of the show, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. You can get to us at 800-537-5252. So let's roll with Jane and Michael Stern. They write the Road Food column in Gourmet magazine.
Lynn, if you happen to be suffering from insomnia in Pittsburgh, we have a restaurant that you need to try. It's called JoJo's, and it's near the produce market. And their motto is breakfast served all day, every day. But what that means to them is that they open at 11 p.m. and close at noon. This is a place designed for the truck drivers who deliver produce to the market, truckers who arrive in the wee hours of the morning and need a hearty meal. They go to JoJo's to get it.
I think the Pittsburgh Strip in general, which kind of grows out of the farmer's market it goes for blocks, really comes awake at night. It's really the most fun to eat there after dark.
I would imagine so. I've only been there during the day and on a weekend, and it was very quiet. But what do they do at JoJo's? What's breakfast like at JoJo's?
Breakfast is huge at JoJo's. I mean, we spent an evening at JoJo's and watched people come and go, which was an event unto itself. But they make these great big omelets. And when I say great big, it's like, I don't know how many eggs, maybe 3, 4, or 5 eggs, but that's not what's so big about it. What's big is that they stuff these omelets with, I would say, 1/2 pound of home-fried potatoes, hot and sweet sausage chunks, a rainbow of vegetables, you know, whatever you want, and they fold it. It can barely fold over. You know, there's so much stuff inside the omelet. And one of these omelets truly is enough for any two big appetites.
It sounds like it. Do they do other stuff as well?
They might, but I wouldn't know.
You keep ordering the omelets, right?
Lynn, I have to tell you that when we ate at JoJo's last, Michael got his, you know, enormous omelet on a plate in front of him. And I looked at him, and his sort of his mouth had fallen open. And I thought, well, you know, I know Michael loves food and he loves road food, but, you know, this is a different look. And I looked behind me, and there was a lady of the evening who obviously uses the strip for her, you know, for other things than bringing produce. And she must have had 8-inch-long artificial fingernails and the world's biggest fake bosoms I have ever seen. So it actually got Michael's mind off the omelet and onto something a little more
Well, it sounds like
raunchy.
JoJo's is a place to go to take in the scene as well as the food.
Oh, it totally is.
It is an amazing scene. I remember that night we spent all night there. Late in the evening, some guy came in and was a little bit tipsy, and he explained to us that he loved the JoJo's omelet, and he always came to JoJo's for the purpose of drinking an omelet after eating beer all night.
Drinking an omelet?
That's what he said.
I think this is the best show in town. Hey, thank you, guys.
Bye, Lynn.
Bye, Lynn.
Happy cruising.
Nighttime. and Michael Stearns Classic Guide Road Food has been updated. Now, you can tune into the Stearns right here every week, but you know, you can get their food finds anytime. Go to the website, splendidtable.org. I've been thinking about style. You know how certain people seem to have it when it comes to entertaining? I'm not talking about the obsessive-compulsive perfection thing. I mean attitude combined with something new to our eyes. Now, for instance, our friends Nan and Sam do these wonderful, simple dinners. Their meals always feel so generous and comfortable. Well, I realize that one important piece is what their food is on. The serving dishes are big, oversized pottery pieces. I mean, even stew for four piled in the center of a cartwheel-sized platter, well, it looks open-handed. The message is, we're so glad you're here. Help yourself. The best stuffy dinner icebreaker was at a New York do. Now imagine this. A table full of people without much in common and a very shy host. But then the centerpiece swung into action. It was a series of gorgeous still lifes of greens and vegetables with paring knives stuck here and there. Well, our host explained that it was a make-your-own salad. Pass, cut what you want, pass some more. We each had bowls and dressings. Well, you know, it's pretty hard not to loosen up when you're all tearing lettuce together. But the best part was our shy and very clever host. He barely uttered a word. He just grinned. Speaking of stylists, I love Sally Schneider's style. There is this effortless modern touch that she gives her food, that dash of the unexpected that makes a dish so good. Well, Sally writes for magazines, and her book is aptly named A New Way to Cook. Sally, good to have you back.
Hi, Lynn. Good to be back.
Hey, Sally, what's your take on nut oils? I mean, they're all over the place.
They are. Thank goodness. I love them. I use them all the time. In fact, they save me constantly when I'm looking for a good way to flavor things.
Mm-hmm.
People often ask me why buy a nut oil. They're rather expensive. And I realize when they ask that question that they haven't had a really good nut oil because they haven't been available, and they are now. There are some wonderful producers, Jay LeBlanc from France, and then La Tourangelle has been a cooperative effort from California and France, and then there is California Press, which is our own American nut oil, which is terrific. So those you know you can rely on, and the reason they're delicious is they are made from roasted nuts, and they are like essences of nuts, those being walnuts, hazelnuts, pecans, pine nuts, even roasted peanut oil can be fabulous. So what to do with them?
Exactly, because they are pricey. They really are pricey.
Yes. But you know, Lynn, they are worth every penny. And I'll tell you why. But the one thing to remember is you use very little of them at one time. So they last quite a while if you refrigerate them because they're a bit volatile.
So do you ever cook with them, actually saute in them and that kind of thing?
That's a great question. They are delicate oils, and their flavor dissipates when you subject them to a high heat, like a sautéing heat. That being said, they are terrific in baked goods. I often use them to pump up the flavor of a nut cake or cookie, or, you know, I've even made a nut cake without any nuts.
using nut oil?
Yes.
Do you use it instead of the butter?
Exactly. You use it instead of butter, or you can use a combination of nut oil and butter, and it is totally fragrant and delicious and lovely.
What about savory dishes?
The list for me is endless. I'll tell you what I came up with recently, and this led me on a whole train of thought with nut oils. I roasted some sweet potatoes, and I was thinking, what can I do new? Well, I put some butter on them, and then I put a little bit of hazelnut oil. And the combination was fabulous. And then I thought, well, hazelnut oil and butter go well together. What about creme fraiche and hazelnut oil? So then I started to throw creme fraiche and hazelnut oil on leeks that I had steamed. They were unbelievable. And then I took that idea and drizzled boiled a little hazelnut oil into cream and whipped it and made a hazelnut-scented whipped cream. And then let's move on to walnut oil. Walnut oil is great on vegetables. So what I'm saying is you can just use it instead of olive oil or butter or with a fat like butter, whatever.
And so if you like the flavor of the nuts, so if I like the taste of almonds in my salad,
yes,
I'm probably going to like almond oil tossed with that salad.
Exactly. And vinaigrettes over greens, especially the more robustly flavored greens, mm-hmm, like endive and radicchio and the cresses, are totally awesome with nut oils. They also love to have figs and pears and apples and even some of the light kind nut thrown in for a terrific salad. I also use them to make quick slaws. I will just shred some cabbage or fennel, maybe with an apple, and use a pecan oil or a walnut oil. It's an instant dressing. You need to do little more than that for something really flavorful.
Now, what about keeping them? Because they're very fragile. They go over the hill pretty quick.
They do, and I think that's one of the reasons that people may have been inadvertently buying rancid oil. Check the date, first of all. Most of them are dated now, and make sure you get one dated a year ahead or so, and so you know that it's a fresh oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've opened it, keep it in the fridge. If you find you're not going through it quickly, and I mean, you know, within a few months, pour a little in a bottle and give it to someone as a gift, and you can turn people on to them because they're really, really wonderful and useful.
That sounds like a great idea. Hey, thank you, Sally.
You're welcome, Lynn.
Food Authority Sally Schneider is author of A New Way to Cook. Now, you can find her recipe for leek noodles with creme fraiche and hazelnut oil. I have got to make these this weekend on the website, splendidtable.org. Now, while you're on the site, sign up for our weekly e-newsletter. It's called Weeknight Kitchen, and each week we send you a quick worknight supper recipe and shopping and technique tips, too. But best of all, Weeknight Kitchen's free. So, sign up, guys. splendidtable.org. Coming up, wine expert Andrea Immer decodes Burgundies, new music to party by, and the new Paris restaurants. Here today, gone next week. Really. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. Our show is brought to you by Super Target, a grocery store and Target all in one, where guests can have their cake and a plate to eat it on, too. Online at target.com/supertarget. Andrea Immer is a master sommelier. Now, this is a PhD in wine, but in spite of the high-flying background, Andrea has a down-to-earth approach to the grape. Her latest book is Everyday Dining with Wine. Andrea, it's good to have you back with us.
Thank you. Great to be back.
You know, I thought today it would be good to talk about Burgundy.
And my favorite.
But why is Burgundy always so expensive?
Well, Burgundy is so expensive because it is a very small region within France where they can make wines that are labeled Burgundy that are and that have the character of Burgundy that so many people love. So when you have a small growing region, you have limited supply. And anybody who studied economics knows supply and demand mean that the prices can be high.
Okay. The other thing about, I'm thinking French Burgundy now, this has to be the most confusing area for people to understand. And is there a code here? Is there something to find on the label that tells us what we need to know?
There are a couple of things on the label of a French Burgundy that you should look for and that will really key you in. First of all, increasingly French Burgundies are labeled with not just the region, which is why they're so confusing, because if you're not familiar with the regional names, then you don't know what you're seeing.
Uh-huh.
But increasingly, some of the Burgundies are being labeled with the grape that's used to make them. And for reds, that means the Pinot Noir grape, and for whites, that means the Chardonnay grape. So if you see the grape variety, then certainly you're home free. But there's one other piece of information that you should look for, and that is if you're looking on either, look near the importer name.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be on the front label, could be on the side or the back. And you'll see the words either white French Burgundy wine in English,
right,
or you'll see red French Burgundy wine or something like that. If
so,
you see either of those, then you know the grape varieties for whites or Chardonnay, for reds or Pinot Noir. So, woohoo! Now you know something about the style of the wine if you're familiar with those grapes.
Then there is the confusion, and I guess the reason why I find it confusing when you start to talk to wine people is that, unlike other wines where it will say this is made by this chateau or it's made by this maker in California, a Burgundy isn't necessarily made by the people who grew the grapes.
That's correct. A lot of times they're individual, independent growers who sell their grapes to a large company that bottles it, that vinifies it or ferments it, and then bottles it under their own name, kind of the way in this country orange juice is done. You see, you know, the product of many growers under a label like Tropicana or something like that. And so Burgundy, there are two types of producers. There's the grower who also makes the wine and sells it under their own name. They're called a vigneron, okay, which means just basically a wine farm that makes its own wine. And then there's a second type called a négociant, and they're the ones who buy in grapes or wine and then bottle them under their own label. And so sometimes you can have the same Burgundy name, for example, the name of a town. Most Burgundies are named for the town or the vineyard that they come from. You may have that same town or that same wine name with multiple producers, because you can have a vigneron that makes some of the grapes from that town into wine, and then you could have négociants that do it. So there are quite a few permutations of the same vineyard source that you can have in the wine, and they can vary in quality, and I think that's the source of confusion for it.
Is there anything, again, on the label or anything that can give us some clues? Because I understand that it's not a difference in quality. A négociant can make really great wine, and so can a vigneron. But again, any clues for us who are just starting out?
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a négociant that can make great wine, and what you're looking for to know that it's a négociant where they buy in the grapes is the word maison. So if it's Maison Louis Jadot or Maison Joseph Drouin, for example, that means it's a négociant. And there, all you need to look for is just to make sure that you choose one with a quality reputation, because like any great brand name, they have a reputation to uphold. So from one year to the next, they're not going to put schlock in the bottle. They're going to make sure it's good stuff under their name. And then if you want to explore wines made by the vignerons or the growers, look for the word domaine. And domaine just means winery, but it means particularly a winery where they grow all of their own grapes, whereas a maison is a winery where sometimes they purchase them from other growers.
A maison is a house, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So if we're going to start out, if we've never really gotten into French Burgundies, where would you have us begin?
I would first have you start out with some of the classic regional names that sort of are most widely available, so you get a baseline. So for the whites, you would taste a Pouilly-Fuissé, which, like all white Burgundies, is 100% Chardonnay. And you would then also taste another regional wine name called Meursault. And the reason you want to do those two is that the Puy Fuissé is usually not aged in a barrel, and the Meursault is. And the two different, those are the two different styles of Burgundy. One that's not aged in a barrel, so it's usually aged in a stainless tank.
Right.
And then one that is. And those are the two styles that are the benchmark Chardonnay styles that the rest of the world emulates when they make Chardonnay.
And these are the both white Burgundies.
Exactly. Both white Burgundies, 100% Chardonnay.
And now for the red.
And then for red, you would want to taste, again, two different ones. You'd want to taste one from the northern section of Burgundy, which is called the Côte de Nuits, and that just stands for the slope near Neuilly-Saint-Georges, which is one of the towns.
Right.
So Côte is slope, and Nuits is short for Neuilly-Saint-Georges, a mm-hmm. town. You'd want to taste one from there, and I would suggest that you look for something in any one of them, but you might look for one from the village of Neuilly-Saint-Georges. And that's going to give you a full and intense style of French red Burgundy based on Pinot Noir. And then you would want to taste one from the southern section of Burgundy called the Côte de Beaune. And you might as well choose one from there from the village of Pomard, because that one's usually pretty easy to find. So for the reds, you have a Neuilly-Saint-Georges, powerful, more intense from the northern section.
Right.
And then you have Pomard, a little bit more elegant from the southern section.
Now, what about pairing the white and the red with foods? Some basics.
This is where it really gets exciting, because they all have what every wine that really is a great food partner needs, and that is great acidity and complexity. So for the whites, for the style that is aged in stainless, the Puy Fuissé,
right.
I would pair that with something that's either salty or fishy or briny. So to me, that gives you a lot of choices. It could be something like smoked salmon, which is salty, or it could be something like oysters, which are briny.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could even go with fried foods, because they could be both salty and briny, maybe like a fried fish or something like
right.
that.
Right.
And then for the barrel-aged style, the Meursault, put that with something that's really going to showcase its rich toastiness that comes from the barrel. So that might be a mushroom dish or something even that has toasted nuts in it, you might have heard of the classic dish trout almondine or something like
right.
that. So it has
yeah.
nuts right in
yeah.
it, and that would really pick it up. And then for the reds, again, here you've got the great food partner sort of characteristics are earthiness and also a wonderful texture. And I usually try to mirror that in the pairing. So you can mirror the texture with salmon, because it's kind of got a silky texture the way that Pinot Noir does.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can mirror the earthiness with mushroom dishes, truffles if you really want to spend a lot of money. You've already spent a lot on the wine, so why not the food?
Right.
And also game poultry like squab or duck are fantastic partners.
Sounds great. Hey, Andrea, thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Are you hungry yet?
Absolutely. Andrea Immer's latest book is Everyday Dining with Wine, and she's got a new DVD, Andrea's Complete Wine Course. Now, you can find Andrea's recipe for pearl barley risotto with mushrooms and carrots. This is one of the things she loves to serve with those Burgundies. It's on the website, splendidtable.org. About music as wallpaper. It's seasonal overload time. I mean, one more chorus of It's a Holly Jolly Christmas and I am over the edge. Well, figuring out great music for entertaining is a tad tricky right now. Now, this is where Bob Duskus comes in. He and his Six Degrees Records reign in world music, and he's become the master of making the party. Hey, Bob, it's good to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Bob, what is your take on holiday music?
Well, you know, the holidays can be very overwhelming in general, and add to the fact that you get what I call ear fatigue by hearing the same Christmas holiday
yeah.
music over and over and over again. It's in the shopping malls, it's on the radio, and even familiar classics can just get to be really, really painful. So today we're going to talk about maybe some alternatives and having music that is a soundtrack that isn't going to make people go nutty.
Okay, so what would be your first pick?
Well, my first pick would be a classic but given sort of a nice zingy, swingy new spin. And that's a record that Ella Fitzgerald made back in the 80s called Ella Wishes You a Swingin' Christmas. And that's exactly what it is. It's swinging jazz versions of Christmas holiday classics as done by really one of the greatest jazz voices of all time.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way.
You can hear Ella puts her indelible stamp on this music. It makes it fun again. It would be perfect for a holiday party. It's not so obtrusive that people are going to be saying, oh, turn the music down. It's just going to put a little spring in everybody's step, and it's refreshing. It's not just the same old thing.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh.
That is true swing, isn't it?
I think it's something that everybody would enjoy, both young and old.
Take the girls tonight and sing this slaying song. Just get a bobtail nag, 240 for his speed. Then hitch him to an open sleigh and crack, you take the lead.
She never gets old. Bob, what about Hanukkah music? I mean, I've never heard Hanukkah music, except maybe the sacred service, but that's something you go and sit and listen to as opposed to having as a backdrop.
Well, you know, this is a common complaint that people have that don't celebrate Christmas, that it's all about Christmas music this time of year. And the fact of the matter is that there really isn't a lot of musical repertoire that is specific to Hanukkah the way it is for Christmas. But there is a great compilation that was put out called Festival of Light. There's actually two volumes of it, and it's music that is inspired by the Hanukkah holiday. It's very eclectic. It's not real traditional music, and it really runs the gamut from upbeat, fun, klezmerish things to more sort of reflective, beautiful pieces like the one we're going to hear right now. And that's by a guy named John Leventhal, who's collaborated with lots of singer-songwriters like Roseanne Cash and Sean Colvin. And this is a song called 1902, because that's the year that his father, who came over from Russia, was born. And John came from a multicultural household. His mother was Catholic, his father was Jewish, and he dedicates this song to his father.
I can picture myself, glass of port, fire, and that's really great.
It's really beautiful. This is something that's perfect while you're serving dinner. We use this record in my house when we light the menorah, and it's another one that it's different, it's refreshing, but it's also really, really beautiful.
Wow, absolutely perfect. So, Bob, Christmas standards, anything new there?
Well, classic Christmas standards, again, are things that you've heard again and again and again. So there's a series that's out there that's taken these records, your favorite Christmas songs, as recorded by a lot of your favorite people, like Bing Crosby and Ella Fitzgerald and Rosemary Clooney and Patti Page, but put a modern spin on it. And what that means is these classics have been given over to dance and DJ producers. It's called the Christmas Remix Series, and Volume 2 of the series is out this year. And this is fun, groovy versions of Christmas classics. It's probably a little bit groovy for dinner, but the one track that we're going to hear here, Lynn, is actually a little bit more sedate. It closes out the record, but I couldn't resist it because it's so beautiful. It's Mahalia Jackson, who many people believe was the greatest gospel singer ever born. And her version of Silent Night, but redone and regrooved, as we say, by a electronic group called 46 Bliss. So again, you can hear this voice that is just, you know, one for the ages, and of course a song that everybody loves, but not the same old version, which should make everybody in your house happy.
I, I must say, between her, Ella Fitzgerald, and our Hanukkah music, you've nailed it. Bob, thank you, and happy holidays.
Well, happy holidays to you, and hopefully this will make everybody's holidays a little bit more sane and musical.
It will, I promise. Bob Duskus is proprietor of Six Degrees Records. Now you can find his music picks on the website, splendidtable.org. I find that I'm starting to stew. I'm just like everybody else. You know, it's the gift thing. What are you going to give? But it occurs to me that ingredients could be the answer. You know, that one thing that you know is going to just be easy to use and everybody's going to love it. So stay with me on this. Here's a few ideas. One's a direct steal from my pal Sally. Pomegranate molasses or syrup. You can find it in fancy food stores. You can find it in ethnic markets. It comes from the Middle East. It's like $3.50 a bottle. And this is concentrated pomegranate juice. And considering that this is the year of the pomegranate, it's a great idea. What you do is you wrap it up and attach a little card telling people what to do with it. You drizzle this over anything that's grilled. Put it into a baked potato. Put it over ice cream. It's sweet, tart, thick, rich, fabulous. Deglaze a pan sauce with it. Add it to salad dressing. So, okay, pomegranate syrup, $3.50, great investment. The other thing is, I've come up with this ginger lemon drink. We did it for Thanksgiving. It's a great non-alcohol kind of thing to greet people with. So now I think I'm going to make it into a Christmas present, all right? This is the deal. It's ginger lemon syrup. So all you do is equal parts of sugar and water, and for every cup of sugar, after you boil the sugar and water until it's dissolved, you add a tablespoon of ground ginger and the juice of a whole lemon. And then you just put that in a jar. Now, here's what you do with it. You can make ginger lemon fizz. Figure two parts bubbly water to one part of the syrup. Or you can make ginger lemon rum punch. Same idea. Do the same drink. Throw some rum in it to taste. So that's the ginger lemon syrup. It can go out in jars. And then the last thing, well, it's a little odd, but this is dip season, and it occurred to me that there is this dynamite sour cream out there. It's called Nancy's. It's made in Oregon. And this sour cream is so good. You chop a scallion, and you have a dip. I mean, I put sugar in it, and it becomes a frosting. And I've actually... And then, of course, there's eating it right out of the container. I know it's odd handing somebody a gift of sour cream, but... You know, it's the holidays, and you're giving them something that all they have to do is add the raw vegetables. So, there are my picks. See what you think. Well, it's time for the weekly trivia challenge, and thinking about music got me thinking, of course, about food and music. So, this week's question is, what's the connection between John Lennon and a bologna sandwich? We're going to have that answer in a moment, and we will be opening the lines for your calls. You can get to us at 800-537-5252. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target. It's Target, now available in food, where you can find the expected and unexpected aisle after aisle. Online at target.com/Super Target. Now, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls in a moment. The number is 800-537-5252. But first, I've got the answer to this week's trivia challenge. Now, the question was, what's the connection between John Lennon and a bologna sandwich? And this does reveal how the inner parts of my mind work. They both went with pickles. John Lennon's first girlfriend back in Liverpool in 1958 was Thelma Pickles. And I think I can tell you what they ate, because it was probably the same thing that the Beatles loved when they were starting out in Liverpool. A regional specialty, if you will. Jam buddies. Now, this is a sandwich of white bread, butter, and strawberry jam. Now, your main course before the jam buddy would be the chip buddy. A sandwich of buttered white bread stuffed with chips. French fries to us. I figure, what could be bad?
Hello.
If you're feeling sad and lonely, there's a service I can render.
How'd you get my number? The best time.
Tell me and I'll be around.
It's time for your calls, brought to you by new Muir Glen Organic Soups, created to savor. So pick up that phone, guys. Number is 800-537-5252, and we will talk. Okay, let's see who is waiting. We have got Kate on the phone from St. Paul. Hey, Kate, what do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm throwing a housewarming party and really love salt, and so I wanted to do a salt tasting party ending with shots of tequila. And I'm sort of...
I love it. What a super idea.
Thanks. And I'm sort of stumped on what kinds of salt to use. I thought about maybe doing, you know, radishes and tomatoes as a tasting, but
right.
Then really didn't know how to cleanse the palate in between the salt tasting, so my guests will continue to taste the salt.
Well, I mean, if you're going to be really technical, you cleanse your palate with water, but you're having a party, so
right.
I would have a bit of wine available,
okay.
Just, you know, in case of a pinch.
Okay.
The other thing is, if you have something that has lime in it,
okay.
You know, like very weak mojitos.
Okay.
Because the acid helps cleanse the palate between salts.
Okay.
And I mean, are you thinking of having a bunch of different salts and then you have all these things for dipping in the salt?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a great idea. I think it's just great fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, you could use any raw vegetable, a whole variety of raw vegetables, which would be kind of fun.
Okay.
You know the other thing that might be really interesting?
Hmm.
I'm thinking of ice cream, but ice cream isn't practical on a buffet. Panna cotta, which
okay.
is this Italian cream, and there's a recipe, I think, on the website. It's my recipe for panna cotta. It's, you know, on the Splendid Table website.
Yep.
And in all modesty, I have to tell you, it is the best panna cotta you will ever put in your mouth, and it takes 15 minutes to make.
Okay, that sounds perfect.
Yeah, and you can make it ahead.
Okay.
Now, the deal would be, though, what you want people to do, you want a bowl of this, and you want disposable spoons, because the idea is that everybody would take a little spoon of this
mm-hmm.
and sprinkle coarse salt, whether it's sea salt or kosher salt, just a few grains on this, because the big thing now is salt with sweets like chocolate,
yep.
creamy things, you know this,
mm-hmm.
and it's delicious, and I think it would be such a hoot to do that.
Okay.
You know, and you could do that also, you could have a fondue pot of like hot fudge sauce and with the same thing, and a bunch of spoons.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, and I love the idea of ending with tequila.
Thanks. Do you have any good salt that we should shoot the tequila
Well, with? Malden salt's a great one.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say any of the gray salts from the French coast.
Okay.
You know, they'll say Brittany or whatever. If you want to splurge, get a fleur de sel.
Okay,
and
I
then,
actually have that.
Okay, that's great. And then what I would do is I would get straight, you know, kosher salt.
Mm-hmm.
No iodized salts, because they tend to have a chemical kind of quality to them.
Okay. And see if everybody tastes the difference.
Okay.
I think you'll have a great time. I mean, there's pink salts out there and all that if you want to get fancy. But this would be kind of basic, and it would be great, and people will have a wonderful time.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
It's going to be quite a housewarming when they all curl up and go to sleep after the tequila on your living room floor.
It's true. But at least they'll last a long time.
Exactly. Hey, Kate, you take care. Have a great time.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
You can reach us at 800-537-5252. We have Tana on the phone from Canyon Lake, Texas. Tana, am I pronouncing your name correctly?
Well, close. It's Tana.
Tana. Okay. Yeah. Hey, what do you want to talk about?
I need to know how to make greens like my grandmother did, which I have no idea how she did it because we were not allowed in the kitchen. I just know that I like them and I can't get the same results.
Okay, now you have to tell me because I'm trying to channel to your grandmother right now. But okay. What did they taste like? Were they melting and tender and, you know,
yes, and
smoky?
They had like a real rich flavor when I make them. I've tried boiling them in water with butter. I've tried with bacon and onion. I've tried sauteing them in olive oil with the bacon and onion, and I just can't get that, I don't know how to explain it.
That body.
Just a real
that,
rich flavor that comes out of it.
Could she have used a really good smoked ham hock?
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, because I'm thinking the classic, now this is a northerner speaking, but my understanding is the classic pot liquor, you know, you cook the greens in this pot, would be you could have chopped onion in there, you could have even garlic in there, but what you really want is some great smoked pork. You want, you know, the ham hock, which is the end of the leg of the ham, or it's the, you know, the front leg of the pig, and you want it from a really good smokehouse. I mean, you live in a part of, I'm not sure, where is Canyon Lake?
It's near San Antonio. It's about 30 minutes north of San Antonio.
I'm not sure. I mean, I know parts of Texas. For instance, I know there's a burger smokehouse somewhere in Texas that does really very respectable ham and bacon, and they would have great ham hocks. And I know sometimes you go into supermarkets and you've got locally smoked stuff that's really great. What you don't want is the stuff that's pumped. I mean, if you read the label and it says water and sugar and polysorbate whatever, that's pumped. That's not aged pork that's been slow smoked and dry cured. If you see it says salt, maybe sugar, you know, smoke and maybe one preservative, that would be the kind of pork you want. And the idea would be is you take some, you know, you make a broth, you put a couple of those in water, you cover them barely, you let them simmer. See when you get a really rich tasting broth, you can put onion and garlic in there if you want it. You may dilute it a little more and then you put the greens in and you cook them until they're almost melting.
Okay.
The key is going to be finding the great pork.
Okay.
And you're going to cook those greens until like 45 minutes, an hour, longer. You want them melting. And it's going to depend on the greens, you know, how mature they are and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Okay? Right. And by the way, this will freeze well. Once it's made, it's going to freeze pretty well.
Oh, there's never any leftovers. I love them. I eat them till they're gone.
Okay. Hey, you enjoy.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Take care. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. Let's see, who's up next? We've got Dana on the line from Minneapolis. Dana, what do you want to talk about?
Well, I was wondering if there is a way to make veggie burgers at home.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Is it hard to do?
No. I don't. And it's not really hard to do. And there's a couple of ways you can do it. This is the basic formula, okay? You want really good tasting beans. And two of my favorites are black beans and chickpeas. And you can mix stuff up. And you want a really good protein source. And that could be lentils. So you could get canned chickpeas and canned black beans, and you could cook up lentils. Lentils cook in 30 minutes.
Okay.
You know, so that's not a big deal. And then the idea is that you want, and you want to make sure that those beans are dried. You know, you don't want anything sopping wet. So when you get the beans from the can, you rinse them in cold water, you drain them, and then you just spread them out in a paper towel.
Okay.
And when you cook the lentils, you cool them down, spread them out in a paper towel. And you could even do that, you know, 2 days ahead. And then the other thing is you want a sautéed flavor base. So, for instance, it's usually sautéed onion. You might throw in chilies one day. You might add celery and carrot another day. You might have your favorite herbs in there or spices. But I'd say for every, let's say, total half pound or so of beans, you'd want one small to medium onion sautéed.
Okay.
You know, and not a lot of oil. You want a little olive oil. So, you know, again, you don't want things wet. And then you need, so that's your flavoring. And you can throw nuts in there, which are fabulous. You can grind them or chop them. You can add any kind of seasoning that you like. And then the third thing you need is a binder, something to hold it all together. And breadcrumbs are great. And if you can find them, I mean, there are a lot of specialty stores. And in fact, there are a lot of supermarkets carrying them now. There are these really flaky breadcrumbs from Japan called panko, P-A-N-K-O. And you can stick them on the shelf and use them when you want them. But what I love about them is they're not heavy, you know?
Okay.
And mayonnaise. So let's say you've got, 4 cups of the lentils and the black beans and the chickpeas. Okay?
Okay.
4 cups total. You do a medium onion that you saute. I would throw in chilies and peanuts and basil and, you know, go for broke on it.
Yep.
Okay? And then, and everything's sort of, you know, been sopped up, so it's a bit on the dry side. And then I would add about 1.5 cups of panko breadcrumbs, and I would add about 1/2 cup of mayonnaise.
Okay.
And the idea is the mayonnaise binds it together.
Okay.
And so, and you can chill that, by the way, and use it over a day or two. And then what I like to do is I make little hamburgers out of them, and I bake them on a baking sheet in the oven, you know, or a shallow baking pan, because sometimes they're hard to turn. Mm-hmm. You know, so you want them about 1/2 inch thick, and you do burgers the size of whatever, you know, you want. And you bake them about 350 for about 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay.
And you're there. Because everything in there is cooked. You just want to get it heated through and bound together.
Right, exactly. It's just like the frozen ones. And then they're freezable pretty
easy. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. But they're so good.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, chickpeas are sweet, black beans are meaty, and lentils are just dynamite. And lentils are solid protein.
Right.
You know, in case you're worried. But that's how you would do a veggie burger. And you can vary it, obviously.
Right. Great.
Oh,
thank
I forgot
you.
To tell you one thing.
Uh-huh.
You crush the beans.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you throw the beans in the food processor. I almost forgot. This is very important. Yeah, you throw the beans in the food processor, and you don't want to make them into a total puree, but you want to really crush them a lot. You know,
Makes sense,
because you want them to be able to stick together.
Okay.
Hey, enjoy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Well, Karen Kane left a message on her answering machine about a new restaurant trend in Paris. Now, Karen does personalized guided tours around the city. She calls it Paris by Design. So I figured she knew from whence she spoke. And when she said that the latest in restaurants is places that open and close within a week or two, I wanted to know more. Karen's on the phone. Karen, welcome.
Hi, Lynn.
So tell me about these restaurants in Paris.
Well, the trend is les tables éphémères, restaurants éphémères or temporary. It began last November as part of a 2-week event organized by the department store Printemps. And what these restaurants seem to have in common is that they appear for a limited amount of time. They're small. Many of them don't take reservations. Their menus are created by very well-known chefs. They are just a total buzz, and then they're gone.
Huh. Well, give me an example of one.
Well, okay, Alain Passard, who has Arpège, last May had a temporary restaurant called Végétable. Again, this was in the Printemps department store.
This is vegetable. That's what it translates as, right?
Exactly. The ingredients came from his private garden. They were prepared and served by his staff, so it was, in many senses, the same as going to L'Arpège, his well-known starred restaurant, except that it was smaller. The prices were smaller, but it still had lots of ambiance and fantastic food for a fraction of the price.
So how do these people know about these places? How do you make money doing this if you're open for 2 weeks?
Well, that's what's really interesting to me. I think that it is a great way for ambitious chefs to get good press. So they're not spending money on ads. but they are putting money into a kitchen, and small. Usually, the restaurants are small. There aren't a lot of tables.
Right.
But they're putting money into a space, and the fact that it's only a limited time gives it a sense of urgency. The fact that there are no reservations puts lines out on the street, so there's just this buzz that's going, and particularly they're trying to, I think, target people who love to eat, who are very much into the food scene anyway. So there's this buzz, you know, in terms of marketing practices, it's great because it's a short amount of time, you're hearing lots about this particular restaurant, it makes a big splash, people are loving it, and then it's gone.
It's almost like the equivalent of an art installation. You know, you have this temporary, almost surrealistic experience as a restaurant.
I think that's a great analogy.
So tell me, what's opening now? If we were to come to Paris right now or in the next couple of weeks, where should we go?
There is a place that's only open a week, the last week in November, La Vianderie, and it actually is part of a bigger festival called Fooding, and it's got an all-meat menu with wines from Cahors.
So that's from the south of France?
Yes.
And any other places opening up before Christmas or, you know, over the holidays?
Not that I've heard of. One of the things that seems to be particular about these restaurants is many of them come out in the spring. So the whole thing started last November. There were a couple over the winter.
Right.
But then May came, and then there were quite a few. And the difference there are actually a lot more restaurants, they're sort of seasonal restaurants in Paris when the weather gets nicer. But these are not seasonal restaurants. These are apart just because they may only be open for a day or a week or a month.
I love it. So if we come next spring, we can just go night after night to a different place that will be gone by the time we blink.
Exactly.
It's Brigadoon in the restaurant world. I like this. Hey, Karen, thank you.
You're welcome.
Karen Kane does personalized tours of Paris. You can get information on her tours called Paris by Design on the website. splendidtable.org. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us. Remember, you can call us anytime. The number is 800-537-5252. And until next week, let me leave you with this quote from the 18th century French connoisseur Jean Brillat Savarin. He said, "Burgundy makes you think of silly things. Bordeaux makes you talk about them. And Champagne makes you do them." The Splendid Table is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by SuperTarget. Everything you heard here today and so much more can be found on our website, splendidtable.org. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen. It's our attempt to simplify your kitchen life midweek. Register for it online, splendidtable.org. The Splendid Table is brought to you in part by the new Muir Glen Organic Soup Collection. Gourmet recipe soups made from premium garden fresh ingredients. You can learn more at MuirGlen.com. Muir Glen Organic Soups, created to savor. Our producer is Sally Swift with Jennifer Russell. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. Our website is managed by Judy Graham, Julia Schrankler, and Jeff Harkness. Have a great week. Be sure to join us next time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.